Insight on Business, the News Hour, is made possible through the support of the HR professionals at Oasis, a paychecks company. Learn how to grow your small business or nonprofit by outsourcing your HR and payroll functions. OasisAHR.com.
Welcome back to the Business News Hour. Grateful that you have tuned in again today. We are with author and speaker, lecturer Joe Klein, and we're talking about something that does impact each and every one of us. It is about healthcare, and we're going to dig into this with Joe in moments because it is something that we hear about from everyone, no matter the age. It's all about healthcare choices, where you go, providers of healthcare. There are healthcare deserts currently in the United States. We'll talk about that and a whole bunch more. Joe, welcome to the Business News Hour. Nice to have you
here. Thank you, Mike. Glad to be with you.
All right. So let's set the premise here for just a moment. What is it that you're concerned about and that you've written about and that you speak about?
My focus really is on health literacy.
Yes.
Which is probably a phrase that a lot of people are not familiar with. Sometimes it's easier to start with what it is not. Literacy is not advanced care planning, so I'm not referring to healthcare advanced directives and end-of-life decision-making. I have written a lot about that. I've studied that for over 15 years. But health literacy really encompasses that. Health literacy is knowing when, how, and where to access the resources you need to make informed decisions. So whether that's choosing a doctor, the right doctor, or getting online and looking at your symptoms, or doing research on available treatments for a diagnosis you've got, those are all things that you must first have health literacy in order to make sure you're accessing the right resources.
So the idea is you need to kind of know a little bit about yourself, your health, and where to look up or experience healthy alternatives.
Absolutely. And really the first thing you need to know, Mike, is to acknowledge that you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah, right.
Well, which is usually where we all start on this. We don't even know that first question to ask when the doctor says maybe the big cancer word, or we are thrown for a loop and that's just an acute situation. And we don't even know where to begin, let alone be able to gather our wits and know what we should ask.
And why is that?
A lot of it is we simply haven't taught American adults. For many decades, we followed the paternalistic practice model of care, Marcus Welby type, where we literally did whatever the doctor told us to do, and often we were not informed. They made the decision for us, but keeping in mind, the choices were few. So they didn't have 13,000 disease codes back in the 1950s and 60s. So that wasn't even an issue of deciding which treatment, because there might not have been any treatment. Most people died of a heart attack or a stroke. Today, that is not the case. So part of it is just our history of our provider-patient relationship has changed so much.
And when we look at health literacy, where do we begin to even tackle? This is a broad area.
You know, and it's really simpler than you might think.
Okay.
Because
this is
let's talk about functional literacy. Functional literacy is being able to read, write, and do numbers, do math. You don't expect to know everything to be literate. You don't have to know everything in the world to be literate. You have to master the language, whether you're speaking it or writing it. It's really the same thing with health literacy. I'm not suggesting that you be a healthcare expert, even on a condition that you have. I'm not asking you to be an expert on that. I'm asking you to know how to ask questions, when to ask questions, and where to seek information. So these are really, it's a process rather than specific information. So that's the easiest way to look at it. Health literacy is knowing how to get information. It is not the information. It's how to get it.
How to get it. All right. So let's walk this through for many people who go to a physician for whatever the reason might be. And the physician says, well, we're going to have to run some tests or whatever that happens to be those tests are. Those tests come back and the doctor says, well, you've got I don't know. You've got self-lethal winding torque inducer disease. And
oh, my God.
Yeah, I know.
That's
I know.
My first reaction.
Oh, my. Oh my, you've got to be kidding. And we're going to have you do 14 weeks with a midazolam.
Okay.
Do you just go, oh, okay, fine.
Okay. Well, I'm going to step you back a little because when the doctor says we're going to do some tests, that's when the first health literacy cue comes up.
Okay.
Why are we doing the tests? What do the tests involve? Do I need to prepare for them? Are there any risks in the tests?
Ah.
And what do we hope to learn from the tests? So you should be asking
those as
the first thing.
Usually those things are not asked.
That's right. They are not asked. And often people will say to me, well, I went to the doctor, and I say, okay, what did they say? Well, they say I'm going to need a whatever, an MRI. I'm like, well, what are they hoping to find?
I don't know.
Well, we should know. And it might not, I'm not saying that we would say, I'm not going to have that test, but there are also tests that do have risks. It's also a great time for the doctor to be discussing with the patient what risk there might be to that patient. We have 10,000 people a month in this country who are being implanted with an ICD pacemaker.
Yes.
They should not have an MRI.
True.
Because of the nature of the device. Well, if that's not the doctor who was involved with them when they had that ICD pacemaker in, maybe they don't know they have it. And that's one of the building blocks of health literacy, is having a full patient documentation with you so that you really have that history of your medical conditions, your medications, so that every provider you see, that could be a specialist, it could be an emergency room, they know who you are and what's unique to you. So I stopped you at the test stage.
Okay.
So we'll assume that the test went through and you got the results. Now you sit down and he's going to talk to you about the results. Again, we're asking the questions, what does this tell me? How certain are you of this diagnosis? And the other thing, Mike, I think is so important that we all know that we have permission to say, stop. I'm overwhelmed by what you just told me. I can't think of questions right now. Can I make an appointment to come back and see you and bring a loved one with me or do a little research or whatever I think I need to do before I can even ask questions? I'm not even in a position yet, let alone choose a treatment protocol.
We are with Jo Klein, ladies and gentlemen. She's a former attorney, author, and speaker, and we're talking about healthcare literacy. All right. I happen to be friends with a number of physicians, several of whom have recently retired, and they were looking with great joy to their retirement because they tell me, to the person, they have not really practiced medicine for years because they don't get to make the final decision. The insurance company makes the final decision. And what's even worse, many physicians, depending on what healthcare continuum you're at or what healthcare group you work with, are required to see X amount of patients per hour. Now, so I mean, we're having discussions with physicians who are going to say, well, you know, I've got to see somebody. I've got to see three patients an hour in order to fulfill my commitment to my healthcare group. How does that work?
Yeah, it's sad for them. It's bad for us. I will just tell you, we have the best way I can describe it is a perfect storm coming in healthcare, and that's over and above all the things we're always talking about in healthcare, and that is the aging demographics we have, and at the same time, the retirement of our healthcare providers, which is about a third of them are going to go out. We thought we're going to go out in about the next 10 to 15 years. What we're finding is they're going out much earlier because they're burning out, and because of what you're saying. Mm-hmm. Also, they're changing the natures of their practices, Mike. So if they can't take this quota anymore, and I get that, they're deciding to go to a concierge practice or a direct pay practice where they're not taking insurance at all. And because of the size of the aging population that they can draw from as patients, they're more likely to be able to make those choices. It's a real problem. And when you're trying to apply the health literacy part of being an engaged patient, and you're working with a provider who is bound by, if indeed they are, this four patients per hour thing, I will tell you, my doctor doesn't follow those rules. And I'm not saying that he's not told to follow those rules. I'm just saying that he's not. And I feel pretty strongly about people having their number one advocate being their doctor. I tell people, if you don't feel like you're getting respect and eye contact from your physician, you need to make a change, have a meeting with them, have a talk about that. But if you don't move forward, make a change, because if you are hospitalized, you're not going to be seeing your doctor. You're going to be seeing a hospitalist or an intensivist or a specialist or an ER doctor. They don't know you. You need that advocate. You need that person who you can say, my doctor's waiting for a call, and when they pick up the phone, your doctor knows you, and knows about you and is ready to say, well, if she needs to see a specialist, this is the one I want her to see. They're your number one advocate. I think we have really got to start rowing in the same direction with our providers. The last thing we can have is to have this be an us versus them in the healthcare system. There will be no winners in that. And when I hear the things you're saying about doctors, and I know this to be true on the micro level and the macro level, the statistics are frightening. 60% of doctors would not recommend the practice of medicine to a young person. A third of them would not do it again. And this is a huge survey done nationally last year. That's heartbreaking. And that spells disaster for us as healthcare consumers.
Joe Klein, ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about the state of healthcare literacy, to be more exact. Is this a phenomena of the United States, or are you able to speak to, have you seen this in other countries? Is this a global issue, as far as you know?
The lack of health literacy is a global issue, yes, absolutely, and it's being studied and applied internationally. What's happening here, about to happen in this perfect storm, and this really we've always referred to 2030 as the wall, because that's really when it gets the worst. That's when the youngest baby boomers turn 65. And so that was really pictured as that's when all of our supply and demand was going to be the most vivid clash. I think we probably are looking at that moving forward, moving closer to us, maybe 5 years anyway, so we could be looking at 2025. That is unique to the United States. The baby boom is unique to the United States. Keep in mind, after World War II, Europe wasn't really celebrating the end of the war. They were trying to survive and rebuild, and survival being at the top of the list. In the United States, by the end of the baby boom in 64, 40% of Americans were 18 years of age and younger. Think about that, 40%. And we knew there was a lot of kids on our block, but come on, I had no idea. And now look, knock, knock, where did you all come from? Now we're all, 65-ish. And we're the chronic care people. I mean, we have diseases. Three-quarters of boomers have two or more chronic conditions. Almost half of Americans have some sort of a cardiovascular issue. That means lots of medication, lots of doctor visits, and that pulls from the system for people of all ages. So we're the frequent flyers of healthcare. But the perfect storm part of it, that really is unique to the United States because of the baby boom that we had after World War II.
You know, you said something that I just had this conversation with an educator not too very long ago about talking about futuristic thought relative to education, and where 40% of the population was under the age of 18 in 1964, I think you said. Uh-huh. And what's really stunning about that, all of a sudden educators out there said, oh, where did all these kids come from? Uh-huh. And they said, oh, let's build a classroom or our school, or we let's go. And then fast forward, then we didn't have enough room in high school. So it's kind of like we're behind the curve a lot of times.
Always, yeah. The powers that be, the people, the policymakers and the stakeholders have always been behind the parade. And when we waited for more Barbies to be made, no big deal, and hula hoops, and quite frankly, classrooms. There's some debate whether it even matters how many kids are in a classroom, how it may or may not impact education. But now healthcare, this is a different thing. This is really a matter of life or death.
When we talk about healthcare, one of the things that has become extremely popular out there is something called holistic healthcare. And that's where interventions aren't necessarily as common, and physicians are asking or suggesting to people that they do more holistic work on not only during the disease process, but in fact to delay disease processes. As a matter of fact, not long ago, Dr. Yogesh Shah, who is a gerontologist here in the greater Des Moines metro, was talking about three ways in which he believes, and he says the studies indicate that with diet, exercise, and socialization, that we can stave off and sometimes even reverse Alzheimer's disease or memory impairment. Holistic care, is that also part of health literacy, to know about those things and then be able to communicate about
this? Absolutely, because that's a matter of a provider knowing you well enough to know what you would be open to as far as alternatives in treatment. And it's also absolutely self-responsibility. And accountability as an engaged patient is a lot of health literacy. We can't sit back and say, well, I didn't know. You know, you really have to stand up and be responsible for your choices in treatment and lifestyle. Only about 23% of us understand that 80% of chronic conditions, premature chronic conditions, as a result of lifestyle.
Uh-huh.
We can't blame this on our grandparents. You know, you've got a heart condition because you have lousy lifestyle choices. And that's self-responsibility and accountability. But I would go exactly what Yogi is saying. We don't know a lot of these things. We are kind of the incubator in the laboratory for this. We're being studied, the baby boomers. Unfortunately, the results are not going to be available for us. We're going to be gone when they're able to draw conclusions. But we're learning a lot about the lifestyles, the nutrition, allergies, previous conditions, long-term drugs. And another thing, Mike, really one of the big pieces of health literacy is medication and polypharmacy, which is having five or more medications, which, gosh, that sounds like a lot, until you find that a third of all adults are taking five or more and half of all seniors.
Stunning.
There is when dementia-like symptoms show up, which are side effects of drugs. And I know doctors who say the first thing they look at if they see a new symptom is the possibility of a drug.
And a drug interaction.
Adverse drug event.
Which also, oh boy, it was my next question. Were you reading my notes upside down? Yeah, I guess. We have been through and going through this thing called an opioid crisis.
Oh, yes.
And we're literally... thousands of people die every month because of this, and it is a result of from what we can gather, you know, physicians prescribing, patients taking and getting a high and saying, hey, this is pretty cool stuff. Maybe I should, if one's good, maybe four is better. So there is an over-medication issue. This is also a healthcare concern as far as cost goes in the United States, with increasing costs of drugs. I'm glad you brought that up. That does play a very important part in not only the patient, but also the patient's caregivers, if you happen to be a relative who is involved in those decision-making processes.
Yeah, yes? When you're talking about the opioid crisis, we're talking about a lot of different levels.
Right.
We're certainly talking about a quality of life issue. Just read this morning, actually, opioid overdoses are down, but fentanyl overdoses are up. And they're not classified as opioids. So let's not, you know, we should not be waving the banner yet. My concern, I have a great concern that real pain is not being addressed with people who have real pain. Yes, a lot of people get hooked on the positive feelings of an opioid, but then many more of them are, we'll use the word hooked for lack of a better word, are hooked on opioids because they actually need opioids to have any quality of life at all. We're not looking, I don't believe we're looking at alternative pain reliefs as much as we should be. Again, are we lifestyle choices and exercise? And there we go back to what you asked, holistic medicine, acupuncture, Eastern, Middle Eastern medicines, all these things that we could be doing instead of a pill. Pills are handed out pretty easily, and now we have a confusion about where's the problem beginning, because we're cutting back on opioid production, which has actually cut back on the availability of opioids in hospice settings. Now, hold on, folks.
Yeah, really.
We have a problem here if we can't relieve the pain of a dying patient because we think we're trying to stop people from being addicted. And those two don't really go together. Or worrying about a 90-year-old becoming addicted when all we're looking for is giving them some decent quality of life in whatever time they have left.
I'll never forget. I'm chuckling because I'll never forget. I had a person. I was heavily involved in long-term health care at one time, president and CEO of the state's largest continuing care retirement community. I'll never forget when one of the individuals who was living in the assisted living area where, and she was 94 years old, and she came in every morning. She would have two eggs and a piece of toast in the cafeteria. She came in one day and she says, I'm skipping the egg. And I went, what the hell? What's going on? So I went over to her, Thelma, what are you doing? You're not having eggs? She says, no. She said, I went to my doctor and the doctor says, my cholesterol's a bit up, so I'm not going to do the egg any longer.
Yeah.
What?
Go Thelma.
Yeah. Go Thelma. That's what I told her. Yeah, what are you doing?
Yeah. See, now that might have been the most health literate decision Thelma could make.
Her name is Jo Klein, ladies and gentlemen, and she's an author, a speaker, and a former attorney that has taken this idea of health care and literacy to a new level. And, you know, we're out of time. I can't believe this. So we spent 20 minutes talking about this and probably only scratched the surface. We will have links to Jo so that you know more about this, and that and we'll have to have you back, because I think, again, Jo, we've only scratched the surface of this. There's so much.
I would love to come back and talk about some hard numbers about aging in Iowa.
The way aging in Iowa and access to health care, telemedicine, all those things that we're finding. I mean, when I referenced health care deserts, there are out
yes,
there.
Yes, yes. And healthcare valleys. We're using both terms now. So, and new terminology every day to describe these crises. So,
Jo Klein, ladies and gentlemen, just a taste of, I think, what we're going to hear in the very near future, because we've got to do this again. Thank you, Jo, for doing
this. Thank you, Mike.
Once again, that is author and speaker Jo Klein, a former attorney, speaking about health literacy. We will have links to her website up on our radio blog. Well, that about wraps it up for yet another day of the broadcast. Thanks so very much for being with us, for all of us associated with the broadcast. Our thanks to Chap Ramsey, who's our production coordinator. Aaron Libby's in charge of sales and marketing. The voice of the Business News Hour is Hunter Pease, and the music you're listening to right now is arranged, composed, and conducted by our friend James Goodlett. For all those folks, and for Jo Klein, my name's Michael Libby. Have yourself a wonderful day. Be safe, be well, be careful, most of all. Be good to your fellow man. Good day.